My name is Miles Matheson. I'm the solution specialist for Data Platform here in New Zealand, and I'm really honoured to have Scott Klein here, Senior Data Platform Product Manager, come all the way from Redmond's. Was it via India? You've been travelling around the world.
I spent last week in India at their SQL Server Geeks conference.
Oh wow, that's a cool name. I think we should fire that up. So look, we've got a lot to cover today. We're going to give you a good overview of where we're heading with SQL Server. But I think that the first thing that we should do is just have a little bit of a view on how far we've come. And I want to share some insights, and Scott's going to share some insights on where SQL Server is and where we're heading. So, you know, look, I can't believe this. I've been working with SQL Server since 1997. It's been the product for me that's really driven my career, and I've just been blown away. And for me, SQL Server 2000 was the product for me. I kicked off, is when I did all my data warehousing. It took me all around the world. It was the first real relational database that I'd really grasped my hands on and got onto it. And I was really excited about it. Also, it was the first time that I was building systems for customers, and you know, they kept asking me back, which was great.
Yep.
So 2005 came along, and that's when you really got into it.
Anybody still using SQL Server 2000?
Wow, okay.
Wait, anybody afraid to admit they're using SQL Server 2000? A couple hands in back going up, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, you guys, we need to catch up after this.
That's right.
Right after this. Okay. Actually, yeah, so you know, 2005 came along.
2005 came along. And that was, for me, I got started with SQL Server, anybody, 4.2 people out there? Yep.
Oh, good stuff.
Good stuff. And remember 6, 6, 5, 7.
I remember 6, 5.
But 2005 was a game changer, I think, for me, because this is where they introduced some things, a lot of T-SQL enhancements. Like the CTE came out, and that, you know, some performance enhancement on there. So 2005 for me was at that time was a game changer.
Yeah, it was a big game changer for me as well in the area of BI. It was just incredible. Reporting services came to the fray. Integration services came out. Analysis services got a really big uplift as well. How many of you have got 2005? Okay, guys, I've got some bad news. I've got some good news and some bad news, okay? The good news is now's the time to think about upgrading from 2005 and 2000. The bad news is in April next year, we will be no longer doing any support for 2005. So we should be definitely talking about moving to the next version. So you know, that was pretty amazing. I think the other thing that happened with 2005 is that's when we really hit into mission critical. Along came 2008, 2008 R2, and there were some really exciting things in there for me. I was doing a lot of mission critical projects with customers. Data compression came along, it really changed the game. We also had a whole lot of new BI technology around self-service and handling things like master data. Very exciting time with those two products. I'm going to ask the question: how many of you are sitting on 2008 R2? Okay, the majority of the room. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, and then 2012 came along.
So 2012 was an interesting one, and somewhere between 2008 and R2 and 2012, you started to see a focus from Microsoft on some key main areas, and we'll pull this. We'll tell you what those are in a minute. But if you've been paying attention right around that time frame, and ever since that time, Microsoft has been focusing really on three main pillars as far as SQL Server is concerned. And you see this here. You kind of, and we'll dive deep in this in a little bit. But things like performance is always one, security is always one. Started getting into some BI, and in between 2008 and 2002, you see in 2012 cloud connectivity. So if you're paying attention from the slide, you can kind of guess what those three key main pillars are, right? And so really, between 2009 and 2012, you started to see a focus. And one of the things that I really got excited about around that time was the whole cloud connectivity, right? How do we start thinking about the cloud? How do we start moving to the cloud? Not that we want to take your entire environment to the cloud, but how do we start thinking about the cloud? And so this is where in 2012, we really, you know, built into the product with some, cloud connectivity features. You know, and then you get things like another key one was, this is where always on was introduced, right? How do we get the performance? How do we get your availability disaster recovery scenarios, right? How can we make this more important for you?
Yeah, I have to say, Always On was a game changer. Being able to do geo-redundant, shared nothing architecture, not having to have the exact same server infrastructure, being able to do read-only copies, just enabled so many great scenarios for customers. But 2014 came along, and that was a great product. How many of you are on 2012 today? Right, keep your hands up if you're upgrading to 2014. Okay, there's a few of you going there, that's great. So 2014, we're doing some great stuff with that technology, but the big thing for me was when we really worked on in-memory for OLTP, that really, really changed the game. But today, we're not gonna talk about prior versions anymore. We're gonna focus on where we're going. We're gonna drill down onto 2016, and we're gonna take you through in the next the next 55 minutes, we're going to try and do it in 55 minutes.
Yep.
We're going to take you through the evolution of SQL Server 2016 and where we're heading. And I'm going to say this, and I don't know if you agree with me on this, but this is the biggest release of SQL Server since SQL Server 2005. And in fact, I think you were telling me the other day, one of the senior leaders is saying they think it's the biggest release of SQL ever.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, go back a slide, right? If you think about it, 2012. You think about all the, all the features released in 2016, and that's not even a complete list, right? But you have things like, Always On and Row Level Security and Query Disorder. So things that have to do with, improving performance, and then cloud, and then better insights. But if you think about, that's not even a complete list compared to, prior releases. So if you look at that, and you can go to the next slide, if you look at that list, it's not even a complete list. It really fits into these three, and that's why they're saying, look, there's so much stuff we're focusing on that we built into this product that, it's as good as 2005, but we're saying it's even better just because of the things we can do from the big data space and the NoSQL space and better insights space.
I know, it's incredible. So what we're going to do is we're going to break it into three key pillars today. We're going to look at mission critical. We're going to see some of the areas around where we're improving performance and where we're actually doing things quite differently in the database. We're going to drill into deeper insights across your data. I'm really excited about this particular area. It's been a passion for me for a while. And we're going to go through hyperscaling out to the cloud, because there's some very interesting things in there, and I know you're going to be covering some of this in
detail. We'll do a couple demos on some of these key features.
All right. I know we might have said this is like a level 100, but you're going to see some code, so grade us on that. All right. Okay. So let's get into it. Look, mission critical is really exciting. We've got some major changes coming along enhancements into the product. We're going to be doing a lot around performance. We've got some great things around OLTP and for OLTP and memory applications. Security, we're doing a lot around that. We've got enhanced security, always encrypted. That's basically encrypted all the way down to the client, and it's transparent, which is fantastic. We've got better row level security and data masking, and we're going to drill into some of these in a bit more detail. We've also worked on high availability, so we've got an enhanced always on set of capabilities, and really exciting. That's opening up some really interesting mission critical scenarios for customers. The other thing that we've got going on is we've been working on how we can enhance our online operations, and of course our scalability. Am I reading that right? 12 TB, 16 sockets.
Yep.
Man, that's some serious iron right there. Okay. When we look at deeper insights, there's a huge amount of capability coming in SQL Server 2016. We're going to show some of this today. We're going to look at things like Polybase. We're going to look at how you can actually analyze data in different ways. And in fact, you're going to see a lot of sessions during the course of the week where we've picked particular areas here where we're going to drill down and work on them. The other thing that we've been focusing on is powerful insights. And we've got a whole series of advanced analytics coming into the next version of SQL Server. We've had a whole lot of acquisitions. We're going to show some of that a little bit today.
Yep.
But we're going to do a huge amount of enhancements to reporting services. Reporting services and analysis services is going to get a lot of love in SQL Server 2016. And so this is a great area to look at, as well as integration services. I mean, integration services have got some great stuff going on as well. And of course, we're going to cover off this concept of hyperscale to the cloud, the ability to burst workloads out to the cloud, whether that's BI workloads, whether that's storage, whether that's compute. And we're going to talk about some of those scenarios and show some of that in action during the course of the week. And you know, if we get time, we're going to show some of that today. So look, let's start off with that mission critical piece.
Okay. So I think this is, again, these are the three key main pillars that Microsoft is focused on. If you look at, you know, we're not going to talk about every single one of these, but you know, in 2014, they introduced the in-memory OLTP. Anybody running in-memory here? A couple of you. This is significant, right? And in 2016, they made it better. The in-memory is simply the ability to say, I'm going to move specific tables or store procedure to in-memory, not disk-based anymore. So my performance, you know, even in 2014, you can get anywhere between 10 and 25 times the performance because you don't have any of that contention, disk-based contention, right? So they've improved that with 2016. But I think the significant ones that I really like are things from operational analytics. You know, how can I get insights in my analytical workload without having to do, you know, complete a separate database, you know, and do ELT process. We'll talk about that in a little bit. Query data store, that's a nice one because, you know, as a DBA, how do I improve the performance of my database? Well, the query data store says I can get granular information, detailed information about what's going on with each and every query and be able to say, well, this query I want to choose, this query plan, things like that. So I can actually get finer grain control over how my queries operate in my database.
So this is going to make the life of a DBA a lot easier.
Much easier,
yeah.
Right?
You know, the other thing that I'm really excited about this is some of the things we're doing with new technology like JSON support. My manager's called Jason, so when I was talking about Jason's hard to work with, he was a bit upset about that. But you know, what's interesting about this?
He's just not named XML.
No. Actually, didn't you write a book about that? Right. We'll talk about that in a minute. But the other area that's really excited me about the mission critical stuff is the enhanced database caching for TempDB. Right, you know, that's a fundamental shift in TempDB. We haven't really done too much in TempDB, and now what we're doing is we're supporting multiple files for TempDB. So that gives you the ability to do IOPS at the TempDB level. So you know, that's going to really improve the game for customers that are in that situation. You were sort of talking about the OLTP enhancements. One of the challenges that I think customers have faced is that when we released OLTP for 2014 in memory, mm-hmm. we didn't support all of the transact SQL commands. We've got greater support now for in memory, which is great. Still need to check it with a tool, but we've got a lot better support coming with the SQL language area, which is good.
And I think there's some improvements around the security side. Always encrypted, role of security, data masking. These are things that, you know, from as a owner of data. Mm. You know, how do we secure your data? And Microsoft's always thinking about security.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're still, I think you were telling me, we're still the number one database for lack of vulnerabilities.
Yep.
You know, we take security as a first principle. It's not we build the software and then do the architecture.
Right.
So it's a pretty incredible space. But, you know, that data masking thing is really interesting. I think that offers some great stuff. But the other thing that's come up in availability is that we're now putting in availability for some of the services in a different way. And the first one off the rank is integration services. Integration services are now supported in an always-on mm-hmm. Configuration, which is fantastic. So, you know, I think we should look at this in-memory OLTP thing in a little bit more.
Well, operational analytics.
Operational analytics, you're absolutely right.
Yep.
So let's just talk about that for a second. So, you know, one of the challenges that I've seen with customers is that they've, when they're doing business intelligence systems, you know, the challenge that they have is putting a workload against the operational system. And that's one of the reasons why people build data warehouses and they build data marts, is they're taking data out of the transaction system, they put it through a process, and there's a little bit of a latency. And you know, fundamentally, if you think about how OLTP queries run versus analytical queries, they're very, very different. You know, OLTP is really short. You know, it's either a small read or a very tiny update or an insert. Whereas, a BI query, that's a huge sequential read, right? Massive aggregation. And it can really, really lock up relational systems. And this is why people have been building that. And also makes a bit of a problem. It actually delays access to data, right? So you have the latency. And there's been a big challenge in the industry to try and get to real time in a cost-effective way. Yeah, and I think this is where operational analytics is really, really exciting.
Well, I think you hit the point, right? Because when we talk about, again, one of the pillars is data insights. Current BI workloads say, you know, I want real-time insights.
Yeah.
You know, this, the traditional, says, you know, there's no real time. It's near real time. So I have to ETL my data out from a relational database to, you know, my data warehouse database. And you know, you have to be careful because, you know, how fast you want insights into your data depends on how fast you want to move your data from your OLTP database to your data warehouse. And the more you do that, the slower your data, you know, the slower your database becomes. And so you have to be careful. So the goal with this, you know, you got to be careful because we don't want to put a workload on a relational database, but at the same time, we want data insights because the faster we can get information, you know, better insights into our data, the better business decisions we can make. But, you know, if I have to wait to ETL my process out and things like that, then I'm not making real-time decisions, right? How can I make real-time decisions? You know, and so you're right, you know, complex ETL processes, data latency, you know, got to deal with all these issues.
Yeah, you're still probably going to have to do that for some things, but...
And that's okay for some things, that's right. We're not saying it's bad, but what if I want real-time insights, right?
Yeah.
So what operational analytics says is the ability to say, I want to do my operational analytics, right, on the same database I do my OLTP, okay? So I'm not, you know, don't hyperventilate, right? This is, right, so this is the ability to say, I don't want data latency, I don't want ETL. Again, that's bad because there are some, you know, if I'm doing like month-end reporting or things like that, there are still cases for that. But if I want real-time analytics, if I want real-time insights, then I want to be able to do this. And this is what the operational analytics does. It says, you know, minimizing data latency for analytics.
Yeah, and you know, we're not talking about replacing star schemas here. What we're talking about is the ability to aggregate data, run queries against the operational data set without affecting the operational system, okay? So just think about that for a second. That is a big change inside how SQL Server works.
Yeah.
Look, I'm really excited about it. I want to see this in action. You got a bit of a,
of a
demo?
You know, and what's interesting, if you...
go back one?
Yeah, nope.
I'll get you over. Yep.
All right.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know what? You were talking about the TempDB. So, what I'm doing, let's just be very clear. We need to make this disclaimer here.
Yeah.
I'm running CTP, SQL Server 2016 CTP 2.3. It was released.
Well, wait a moment. 2.3?
2.3.
Wait, so, but everyone's only got 2.2 at the moment?
2.3.
When was 2.3 released?
3 days ago.
3 days ago. So, what we're showing now, you're going to be able to download and play with, all right? So, if you actually, who's actually playing with the CTP stuff?
Every hand should go up, people. Come on. Every hand should go up.
All right. If you want to try this stuff out, there's a really quick place to do this, and that's Azure. Azure has the ability for you to dial up a VM, install a CTP. You're not having to put it on any systems.
Yep.
It's ready to go. And if you've got an MSDN subscription, you actually have access to Azure to do this.
Yeah.
So, you know,
and if you download the CTP today, Miles will give you a hug.
Okay, free hugs.
free hugs.
Let's do it.
All right. So, but let's make because it's a CTP. I got you on the spot there. Because it's a CTP, look, things are might change between now and GA. Okay. So what we're going to show you, just you know, the code I'll show you may change, and in fact, I'll point out where they say it may, you know, probably might change, but. It's, you know, the goal with this is to show you, look, how this is going to work.
Actually,
you know,
because it's a community technical preview release, you have the opportunity to provide feedback as well. And, you know, a lot of our active members really are able to shape where we're going by, you know, giving us feedback on how these things work. So that's the other advantage of playing with the stuff early.
So you said TempDB. So what I've done is I've installed CTP. Out of the box, installation of SQL Server 2016, I get 4 TempDBs.
Oh, wow. Okay, right. Is that because you've got a 4-core CPU by any chance?
That could be.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
That's
4 TempDB data files.
Yeah.
Let's make sure data files. That's correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't want to spend time on that. We still have a lot to cover. So what I'm going to do is, if you're operational analytics works both on, we talked about in-memory OLTP. Operational analytics works both on disk-based tables and in-memory tables, okay? Disk-based tables are really nothing you have to do, right? It just works. And we're not going to get into the nitty gritty of how that works. It's just because we don't have that kind of time, because there's entire sessions on how operational analytics works. What we're going to do is walk through a very quick demo on just the in-memory tables. Anybody familiar with how in-memory works? Right, so this will be kind of a operational analytics slash in-memory demo. So what I'm going to do is, I've already created a database here, I think. Let's refresh here. So oh no. First demo out of the gate blows. All right. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to walk through the code here, and then we'll jump out, and then while I fix this. So what I'm doing, it's very simple. All I'm doing is, I'm basically saying, just like in-memory OLTP, I create a database, but what I do is I'd say I'm going to create a file group for in-memory. So whenever you do in-memory, you create an in-memory file group, right? Now your tables don't go there. But it's just, your tables are actually in-memory. They're actually compiled to native C, right? And then what I'm going to do is, I'm going to create a table called in-memory. And notice the point here is, I'm creating a table, and what I'm doing is, I'm saying I'm creating a non-clustered and an index clustered column store, right? So this is an in-memory on a clustered column store. This is new to 2016, I think, yeah. Right? And then I'm saying with my bucket count, and then I'm going to say, let's turn off some, you know, what I'm going to do is, I'm going to default compress every 2 minutes, and I'm going to insert just over a million rows, 1.2 million rows exactly. And because it's in-memory, if I were to do this on a disk-based table, how long would inserting 1.2 million rows take? Quite some time. But in an in-memory table, how long would that take? So I ran this right before, and it took about 5 seconds to do 1.2 million rows, right? So maybe if I, when we fix this, we go to the next demo, I'll have this work, but about 2 million rows. Yeah. But the ability to do this, what I can do is say, hey, I then have the ability to say, watch when I do queries, show that the optimizer, which column store index for that query is selected, right? And because I'm running on the custom column store, my operational analytics, it doesn't matter. I'm just hitting, you know, my operational analytics, I'm hitting now not a disk-based table, but an in-memory table. And so my performance, even for operational analytics, goes better, right? Much, much faster. So the ability with operational analytics simply says is that I'm not having to do an ETL process. If I want to, I move some of my tables to in-memory, but I'm hitting the same database for my data warehouse, yeah, workload that I can for my OLTP database.
So this is okay. Great for like doing operational dashboards, or if you're having complex operations. I'll tell you what, while Scott's just sorting that out, I'm just going to just switch back, yep, back there, and we'll just talk about CTP for Jason for a second. So it really does open up some great scenarios. But look, you know, Jason's really interesting. How many of you are actually having to handle JSON files today? Okay. If you have anything to do with social media or having to do with anything with unstructured data, you're going to end up handling JSON. In fact, I think it'd be fair to say JSON appears to be almost like the new XML. Now, what's interesting for me is that it's completely ubiquitous. This means that it's schemaless data loading. It means that it's easy for us to work with it. And naturally, we want to get that into the database as quickly as possible, because we want to go and marry that up with our relational data. So when I can accept JSON really easily with this scenario, I can export it out as well, which is great. And I can also correlate it with that relational and non-relational. So I'm not having to do, you know, write any custom code to do this. It's all out of the box. You know, what's interesting about this is it opens up a whole series of new scenarios, and particularly when you're integrating with web services, you have the ability to basically take your data from your table, export that out to a JSON file format here. This is just a sort of a sample of the structure. And this is actually inside Transact SQL. You're not having to go in and open up integration services to do this. This is all at the Transact SQL command.
Yep,
yeah, we're good.
Yep.
So, I mean, you know, JSON is a fundamental shift for the industry. People are moving away from XML to JSON, it appears. Is there a reason? What are you seeing the trends?
Yeah, so if you think about it, performance was the number. It was, you know, if you've done anything with XML works great, right? Because you can describe your data. But the minute you start getting into, it's very bloated. So the minute you start working with and getting into large XML documents, the performance just wasn't that good, right? JSON, on the other hand, still allows you to do, you know, describe your data, but at the same time, it's very lightweight. So the like Azure Document DB is based, you know, works with JSON files because it's very lightweight, very performant, and scales immensely, right? So great scalability. So and based because it's based on, you know, JSON development, you know, easier to work with. So there's a, you know, we still support XML, but at the same time we've introduced JSON because it's just, you know, it's easier to work with, better and better performance all around. It's not as you know, much more lightweight.
Yeah, I know. I know you don't like talking about this, but you did. You know, you are probably one of the most world-renowned experts in XML. You've done, you know, very early adopter of it. You wrote a lot of the books on Vox Press for XML. So if you were doing a system today, would you think you would move to JSON first off rather than picking XML as your?
Oh, in a heartbeat. Yeah. You know, and you know, the challenge is, you know, we can't get rid of XML.
Yeah.
Right yet. I don't know if we will or if we ever will. But if I were to do it again today, just depending, you know, I would definitely do JSON.
Oh wow! Well, look, I reckon we should have a look at how this fits together. So what we'll do is we'll just flick over to some of the code constructs. Is it best to do that through your demos?
Yep, let's jump out. Yep. So I think it's actually pretty easy because what we can say is, you know, how do I work with JSON? So and we work with XML here. Okay, this is going to smell a lot like XML. Okay, we're not going to spend a lot of time here, but if you look at this, you know, some of the constructs for XML was for XML, for XML auto, for XML path, for right. If you remember that, this is the same thing. And the interesting here and what makes it even better is that, you know, I can do this right on relational data. So what I've done is I've taken my AdventureWorks database. So I imported the AdventureWorks database, set it to the 2016. Right, and I'm simply going to say, now, again, there's no way, like XML, what I liked about XML is when you did a query, it had a link, you can open it, and it'd format the XML really nice, right? This is CTP, so unfortunately, you can't click the JSON and go, hey, format this for me, okay? But I can have the ability to say, let me just select select some columns for XML auto, there's my JSON, right? Very nice, okay? There's my JSON. If I want to put it in text, I'd get some big, you know, output. Doesn't quite format it, but if I wanted to, I could copy this and format it. It'd be nice to have a nice, you know, JSON formatter, okay? But what's interesting is I can actually get a little better on this because I can use the path node. The path node allows me to just say I can use dot syntax, right? So I can, which is, you know, it's a little more difficult to do in XML, but I can say, look, I want to nest. So if I have a customer with multiple orders, I want to nest this data, so I can say, you know, sales order header as order dot number order dot order date. So I say, here's a customer. So you notice that I've joined customer and sales order header. So I can nest data and say, if there's a customer, nest in my JSON, nest the order information. Okay, and so it's the as order dot number as order dot date, things like that, right? So I only did where customer ID equals 1,000, but it's the same thing. You'll notice that I've got. Let's do this the whole thing here, right? And I've got three records. Let me do it this way as a string. But I've got three records. Say three was affected because there's three records. But if you were to format this out, it simply says there's my customer and there's customers with their specific. There's that one customer and it has specific orders, right? So if you were to easily format this out. But if the ability to work with JSON, just offer relational data and say I want to use JSON because I can take this document and take this. You know, if I want to work with, like, for example, Azure Document DB and put this data. So this is a great transition. We talked about the, you know, hyperscale cloud. Here's some relational data that I want to put in JSON format and store as documents, possibly, in an Azure Document DB. So it makes it very easy to work with Azure, with these JSON type documents. So I can take this out and save it, for example. Okay, so very easy to work with. But JSON says, okay, now very lightweight, very easy, performant, scalable, right? But yeah. Simply the same syntax. So the goal with this was to say, look, you've already, if you're familiar with XML. We don't want to make you learn a whole new syntax just, you know, for JSON, okay? For JSON auto, for JSON path, put a root on that if you want to. Like you see down here, I took it off. I can say, you know, root order and put a root node around that. Okay, so very easy to work with.
Wow, that's pretty cool. You know, are you still able to show the operational analytics as well?
Yeah, you want to go back and see that one real quick? Okay, let's go back and let's, all right. So let's just very quickly, just because we don't want to do out of time. So let's go back. It was insert data. Okay, so I'm going to go to this one. I'm going to go to, okay, so let's create our database. I don't think I have that out there. It's created one called NZ. Yep, I don't have it out there. So let's create a database real quick. Okay, we'll use that. What I'm going to do is now add my file groups. Nope, it's already in use. Okay, what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a table on this. Right, so notice again, it's at in memory. So because I say memory optimized equals on, this table will show up in my database, but it's not a disk-based table. This is an in-memory table, meaning the minute I write this, if you go down into the bowels of the of Windows Explorer, you'll see a DLL called t underscore call store underscore hk. Right, it is a disk. It's an in-memory table. Right, so did I not do that? So we don't have to go back and fix that. What did I do here? Let's try that one. Oh, this one? Yeah. We'll call that one. I thought I cleaned that up. Only one.
Maybe file group file name.
Call that one. Is that what you're talking about? Well, my second demo worked. Huh? Let's try that one. I did. I thought I did. Back up. There we go. Thank you. Okay, so there's our in-memory table. We're going to turn some trace flags off. Okay. Now let's go through and let's insert 1.2 million rows. And the goal here is just to simply say, again, we're inserting 1.2 million rows. This is in memory. Now we can run some queries against it. So this takes about, I can't remember how long it took, right? So this is, again, 1.2 million rows. Huh? It'll crash?
Oh.
I didn't turn, can we go back and turn that on now? There we go.
Worked. There we go.
So 18 seconds. If I had to turn no count on, so the results was because I didn't turn no count on, sorry. That would take it long. But still, 18 seconds for 1.2 million rows. That's pretty good. So we can see 1.2 million rows. Okay. But at that point, so again, apologize for the mess up. I had run it, I tested it, but then forgot to clean some of it up beforehand. But the whole goal is to say, look, I'm now running operational analytics on an in-memory based table. But we need to move on. What are we talking about?
Yeah. Now? We're going to get back to BI. So
yep.
let's just sort of have a look at that. So, look, make no mistake, there's a huge amount of updates coming in SQL Server 2016 for BI. Some of the ones that I'm really excited about personally is Polybase. We're bringing Polybase to SQL Server 2016. It's the ability for us to go and query data sources outside of SQL Server. And Hadoop is a logical option. We're going to drill down into that in a little bit more. We're going to do a lot more around integration services. So we've got better designer support. And we've also got support for Power Query, which is a tool that people use in Excel to analyze data. We're also doing a lot around analysis services. So we're doing a lot around performance and scalability. And we see a lot more features coming into tabular mode as well. But the bits that are really exciting me the most is around Power BI, the DataZen, and reporting services. And so reporting services is going to get a lot more love going forward. And we're doing a lot around the multi-browser support. We're doing a lot around Report Builder. We're adding some visualizations from Power BI into reporting services, which is great. But that's not all. The other area we're doing is we're bringing in database analytics, and it's based on an acquisition that we made earlier this year called Revolution Analytics. So we're doing some stuff with SQL Server 2016 that makes it really exciting, both for operational analytics and for traditional BI. So let's sort of just talk a little bit about Polybase for a minute. You know, look, I know Hadoop's not prevalent in New Zealand. You know, I've only come across personally one or two customers that are really using Hadoop. But the main reason why is it's actually quite hard to work with Hadoop outside of Hadoop. It's very hard to go and integrate it with relational data. So all of those investments we've made over the last 20 years building our data warehouses and getting that data structured well can get a little bit lost when we start using technology like Hadoop. And so what's interesting about this is that, you know, quite often people want to join data from Hadoop environments with relational data. And a good example is if I've got some sort of sensor data where I'm tracking cars, for example, you know, I might store that data in Hadoop. I might run some MapReduce jobs against that, and then I might want to be able to query and work with that data. Now, to do that today, you probably actually export your result set out of Hadoop and import that into SQL Server. What Polybase does, it allows you to run Transact SQL against your SQL Server 2016 database, and then run that query as a map job back against the Hadoop environment, brings all that data back via the Transact SQL interface. And that basically means that you can run Hadoop in your environment and point your traditional reporting tools against it, like reporting services, Excel, any other tools that you might have that are sitting on top of your data warehouse, without having to bring that data back into the data warehouse. And it's very, very smart and very, very exciting. And, you know, huge benefits. And one of the biggest things is that you're not having to develop R coding skills, because SQL Server will take care of that. It'll convert the Transact SQL to R and run it directly on the Hadoop environment. Very, very exciting. Polybase is not new, by the way. We've actually had Polybase for quite some time. It was part of our analytical platform solution, or SQL Server PDW. That's actually now being brought to the on-premise version of SQL Server. The other area that I'm really, really excited about is in database analytics. And this is where you're actually able to take R code, run that inside the database, and do scoring, be able to do predictive modeling against your relational data inside SQL Server. You're not having to put it out into another tool. You're able to call it as a process. What's great about this is that it's really enabling some new scenarios around things like forecasting, predictive maintenance, and being able to do identification of fraud or anomalies inside the database rather than having to put it out into another tool. And you also have the ability to actually download R scripts from the Azure Data Marketplace. So we've got some great algorithms up on the marketplace. My favorite one's the earthquake aftershock algorithm. What you're able to do there is you're able to take an event, and then it'll start looking for outliers against that data. So
yeah, and the flip side of that is you can actually take an R script yourself and if you want and upload it to the marketplace.
Oh, wow. Actually, there's a lot of courses here in New Zealand around learning R. And if you didn't know, R actually was invented in New Zealand. So there's really no excuse not necessarily know it. Right. But, you know, look, it really opens up some great interfaces, great scenarios. The big thing for this is that it's going to be a lot quicker to use this method to do things like predictive or scoring, because you're actually reducing the amount of disk operation that you're doing against your code. You're able to call that as a process. And it's very similar to how the .NET runtime environment works inside the database. We're going to provide the same extensibility with R. Really, really exciting, and it's going to be part of SQL Server 2016.
Yep.
But I mean, you're really excited about Polybase. I think you've got a little bit of a demo here.
I do. And we have to take a step back and look at this because, the whole goal of, and we'll talk about that. I got a session, I think, later today that talks about this. You know, where is, it's just not relational anymore, right? If you think about where, the whole big data concept and the Internet of Things concept, right? We're SQL people. We understand rows and columns. We understand relational. But where things are going, there's sensor data, there's device data. When we think of NoSQL, it doesn't mean not SQL, it means not only SQL. So there's all sorts of data that's just, massive amounts of data that's just not relational anymore. How do we start to work with that data? And as a DBA, if the application's slow, who do they blame?
Yeah.
Right? And so it's like, at some point, this type of data you know, this NoSQL type of data is going to touch us, and whether we're a role as a DBA, you know, whether it's called a DBA in the future, who knows? But this is going to touch us, and so how do we, what Microsoft is saying, how do we allow you to work with this data? How can we provide the ability to work with this data very easily using the tool, familiar tools that you have, right? And this is what Polybase does. This is what you talked about movement, you know, Scoop, Apache Scoop, moving data between Hadoop and on-prem. So let's jump out and we'll show a Polybase demo. So what I have here is a very simple demo, but it kind of shows the power. What I have out in Azure Blobs, my Azure Blob storage account, is this file called Underground Quarterly Hour Exist. So I got data, went to the London Underground, got a load of data. There's like, what it does is every time you enter and exit, you know, the London Underground, it records, it takes a record of that, right? And this is, there's like 350,000 rows in this one file. It's abbreviated. I don't want to make it too big, but it's just a couple, about six columns. What I want to do now is I want to say, hey, I want to be able to query this using Polybase, okay? So there's a couple of things we have to do. First thing we have to do is we have to configure Hadoop, to configure SQL Server, say, I want to use Hadoop connectivity. I want to use Polybase. And so I'm going to use spconfig. I'm going to turn that on. All done. I want to use database scoped credentials. So in this release for CTP 2.2, you have to enable this trace flag, right? This may change in CTP 2.3, in CTP 3. They're talking about that. I need to create a master key here. And then what I need to do, anytime you're dealing with Azure storage, you'd have to provide the credentials to Azure storage. Anybody familiar with Azure here? You got to provide Azure credentials. This is recorded, so by the time you get this recording, I will be changing my username and password, so feel free to record this if you'd like. But I'm going to create credentials that actually allow me to connect to my storage account. Oh, that already exists because I think I just ran it. All right, now what I'm going to do is I have to create an external table. So it's create external data source, right? So what I'm doing is simply creating a data source to this storage account using this credential that I just created, okay? So I'm just saying create an external data source. With that, this takes a second, okay? And all I'm doing is saying if we go into the Polybase demo here, once this is done, and go down, you'll see a new in your databases, you'll see a new node here called external resources. We refresh this, there's my data source, Azure Storage, right? And what I'm gonna do now is, if you're familiar with Hadoop, I'm gonna create an external table, external file format, right? And this file format, if you're familiar with Hive SQL, every time you query a Hive QL, you have to specify, hey, I'm going against this file and here's the format, right? So I'm simply saying, it's a text file, and it's a comma-separated text file, okay? That's all I'm saying here. So I'm going to go up and say create external file format. What did I just run? I think I fat-fingered that, okay? Now what I'm going to do, say create external table, and what this does, you'll notice that it says create external table, and this the creation of this matches the format of the table, of the structure of the file. So these are actually the columns in my file, okay? So I've got a station, the gate, the date type, you know, is it 1, 2, 3, or 4, the flag, things like that. And notice that I'm passing the storage account, so the credentials to that, the text file information I just created, and the file name. So go get this file and create this. Now, you'll notice that when I do this, right, it's kind of interesting. You'll see, right, it says created successfully. It did create a table, but did this create a disk-based table? No, it didn't. What it simply did is it created a metadata structure. It says when I query this file, here's the structure that I want you to put this file, the data in. Simple as that, right? Okay, and then what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, import data. So now when I run this and import data, it's actually going to use this structure to import data from that file into, and what I like about this statement is you notice that if I query my tables here, I don't have this, you know, station table, okay? So what I really like about this statement is it will actually create my table for me and then insert this data, all right? So we can go refresh this. So this is you'll get an error, right? So you have to, you got to be. Let's time out. Yeah. It's probably an internet issue. That's what I'm going to blame anyway. So you have to be, you got to do your homework beforehand and say, you know, because if I open this file, you'll see that stations a string, date types and things like that. It has to match. And you have to go up to the Apache and say, okay, because it is doing HiveQL and doing some behind the scenes. So you got to make sure that the data types match, because if you're trying to stick a string into an int, for example, it's going to fail. So it will, you got to make sure, interrogate your file and say, yep, this is a string, this is an int, things like that. So they do have to match, otherwise this will not work.
Yeah, I know one of the advantages of Hadoop is it doesn't care about the structure of the data, and you know, you're going to have potentially, you know, you could load the works of Shakespeare and it wouldn't care. But, you know, we don't have to import this, but the statistics around that data is what SQL Server uses to generate the R and push that back as a R job. So we need to know the structure of the file to be able to do that. Mm. And the advantage of this is that we don't have to import the data. I know we've just done an import here from the R job, but we could just as easily have done this as a query. Yeah. So, just give me,
so you notice my external table did show up, right? That's just the structure. But then you notice that it did create my table, and there's, 266,000 rows. So very simple. All I did is say I'm going to use Polybase to go and create non-structured, non-relational data, right? And that's the beauty of Polybase, to say I've got non-relational data here, I've got relational here, and now I have the ability to actually query both, join those, and get insights into both my data, you know, both types of different relational and non-relational data. Okay? Does it make sense? Right? Questions? Huh? You can, but not through this way. If you want to push data back into, you have to use things like Scoop. Honestly, I haven't tried. I don't think so. I'm going to say no, because you can use, allows me to use T-SQL. But there's the ability to use Apache Scoop, which is very easy to use to push data, import and export data, you know, from SQL Server to Hadoop and back and forth. So it's possible, but I haven't tried it this way. Okay. So the question is, can I go the other way, right? Can I take data from SQL Server to Hadoop? Is that your question?
Well, we've got a parallel thing where we want to push SQL data into a NoSQL data store.
Yep. Yeah, there's several ways to do that. I think this is from a query perspective, but it is possible, and there's several ways you can do that, right? I just haven't tried it.
Polybase today is really a read-only technology. Yep. It's not a bi-directional.
Yep. I saw another hand, yeah. Yeah, so this very simple example, right? So this file is sitting in Azure Blob Storage, right? Yeah. And all I did was, in this syntax, all I did was use Polybase to say I want to query that data, right? And in doing so, and part of that process was I wanted to create a table and insert that data, pull that data down into a relational database, and then query that data.
Yeah.
If you're going to pull data from Azure Blob Storage, yes. Anytime you're dealing with Azure, then you need an Azure account. Yeah.
So I mean, like you could do this on on-premise HDFS node, you know, Horton Works on Linux, or you know, whatever your distro is. You still need to go through and do that. Well, I'm conscious of time.
Yeah, let me just say real quick. So notice I set it to 7. You can actually do this from on-premises Hadoop, right? Whether it's Windows or Linux or things like that. There's 7, 1 through 7, and there's on-premise, so if you want to do a file from Hadoop, you can do that as well, right?
Cool. Very exciting. And it does open up some really interesting scenarios. I think probably the next area is I just want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the next version of reporting services. So we're actually bringing a lot more capability for on-premise mobile. We're also updating browser support. So you're going to see a lot more capabilities with us, and we're obviously moving towards HTML5, which is great. It's interesting. We have a lot of choices around how we would do mobile BI and how we would do reporting. I was planning to show you reporting services today. It is actually getting some additional capabilities. So the first thing is we're going to be doing a lot more improvements around how you write reports. So obviously, we're going to update Report Builder. We've got improved parameter support. We've got some new chart types. So some of the visualizations that you're seeing in Power BI, we're bringing into reporting services, which is pretty great. But we also made a major acquisition in I think it was March, and the company was DataZen. Who's heard of DataZen? I'm like, hey, the rest of you, I'm going to show you a free lunch. Okay, we all like free lunches. This is definitely a free lunch. If you've got SQL Server Enterprise Edition today, you actually have access to DataZen. So I will show you that in a minute. So as long as you've got SQL Server Enterprise with Software Assurance, you'll have access to DataZen. The other area that we're doing a lot of work on is support of hybrid BI solutions. So this is actually the ability for you to use your on-premise analysis services environment to store all your data and then run tools like Power BI against the analysis services environment, running live queries without storing data in the cloud. So if you want to go and look at my hybrid scenarios around BI, and you're wanting to leverage some of the technology, new technology, particularly Power BI, you do have an option to store your on-premise data on-premise rather than in the cloud, which really opens up some great investments. The other area that I'm going to talk about is DataZen. So DataZen is basically a on-premise mobile client that gives you the ability to generate HTML5 dashboards, generate iOS, and Android apps, both for tablet and phone footprints, as well as Windows. And it's a really exciting and really easy technology to use. And I know that tomorrow in the SQL Server BI drill down, the guys are going to be focusing and going deep on this. I'm just going to show a very high-level overview of how DataZen works in a minute. DataZen does have a publisher app. Today, it's a Windows 8 modern app. So you're able to download that app, build your dashboards and scorecards, and it's really a great way of doing an optimized touch experience. So we'll show a little bit of that in a minute. I'm not going to drill down into the architecture, but what I want to highlight is that DataZen is a visualization tool. It's not an aggregation tool. There's some limitations in DataZen. The first limitation is it's only got 100,000 row data limit. So this is not something that you use to go and build really complex queries and aggregate data. It's something you use where you point it against analysis services to just show some highly aggregated dashboards and scorecards and enable that mobile BI scenario. So let's just have a quick look at DataZen, and we'll get straight into that. So this is the modern app that you're seeing here. This is actually the DataZen publisher. Again, free to download. You know, if you've got SQL Server Enterprise Edition with Software Assurance, you have the rights to deploy DataZen, and you can actually download the server component. So I'm just going to show you a dashboard here that's one of my favorite ones, the speed dashboard. Now, what this is doing is it's showing you what it would look like in the modern app, and it is a fully touch experience. So I've got the ability to use my finger and touch things, look at the different file format, different measures and metrics, which is quite great. I can get a bit of an insight on what's going on. Now, what's interesting about this is that these visualizations can be reused for different footprints. So let's just have a look at that. So I'm just going to go and show you an example here. So this is actually the dashboard as it's already been created. But I can actually do footprints for a tablet, again, using the same visualization, but what it's doing is it's formatting it just for the tablet. And you can choose the layout that you want. You also have the ability to obviously do the phone. And what this does is it allows you to build a mobile app really, really quickly. You can prototype a mobile app with sample data, so it generates sample data in the back end. I mean, then you can actually point that against analysis services. So if you want to see this in action, I really recommend that you go to the BI drill down tomorrow morning at this time. I actually don't know the room, but it's well worth coming and having a look at that. Scott, I'm a bit worried about time, so I'm just going to quickly flip back to PowerPoint, and we're just going to go into what I think is one of the most exciting things that are going on right now, and that is the ability to really extend out our SQL Server infrastructure and investment. So a couple of things that I wanted to call out is with Azure, we've got the ability to use that as your enhanced backup environment. So you have the ability to use that to store your databases, your backups, and bring that down. So you've got Jira redundant. But you also have the ability to do a stretch database. And this is something you were telling me about earlier that you were really excited about. We're not going to touch on all these other things, but just so you know, we're doing a huge amount of this hybrid scenario with SQL Server 16.
Yep.
And we're really giving you the ability to leverage the cloud, on-premise, or both. And
yep.
that's a really exciting scenario for SQL Server. So take us through a little bit more about the StretchDB capability.
So StretchDB, if you think about it, a lot of times, you know, we see a lot of customers and companies, they say, I've got historical data, right? And typically, where do you store your historical data, right? We either move it off to a history table, which bloats your database, or heaven forbid, you take this out and you move it to a non-structured, maybe Azure tables, right? And then you pull it back into a relational database if you want to query that, things like that, right? What this says, what StretchDB basically says is, I'm going to keep everything in the same database, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to move the data I'm going to put the data that's we call cold data, that we don't query that much, and I'm going to move that into Azure, but in the same table. So we're basically stretching our table from on-premises to the cloud. The great and beauty thing about this is that, you know, I don't have to worry about disk space. I don't have to worry about moving data between like my OLTP table to a historical table back and forth, right? I'm simply saying I want this. I'm taking the same table and moving part of that to Azure, right? And I don't have to change my application. It's the same table. We'll just call it stretching that table, right, to the cloud. So if we think about this a little bit, sort of works like this, right? So I've got the table, there's Microsoft Azure, there's SQL Server, there's my app. And what I want to do is I want to say, well, I've got an order history table, and it's very large, right? And a lot of it, I don't want to move it to a history table. I don't want to move it to to some other storage medium, right? But what I want to, I don't query it that often. But, so what I want to do is I'm going to take that, I'm going to stretch that into the cloud, okay? Same table. I can't stress this enough, same table. So when my app says, hey, I need to query this, you know, I want to select star from or select call, you know, first name, last name, you know, title from table where, and I have to, and part of that query says, well, some of this data sits in the cloud. The query, SQL Server is smart enough to go, hey, some of this data sits in Azure, go get that data, bring that down and aggregate it into my results, okay? So I don't have to worry about disk space. I didn't have to worry about change my application. It just works. Okay.
Wait a moment. So this is transparent to the application?
Transparent to the application, transparent to the user, right? And now I don't have to pay this astronomical amount for disk storage because, you know, part of my data sits in the cloud, right? Again, hyperscale cloud. We saw this with Polybase, saw this, you know, StretchDB. This is where we're saying, hey, you know, even we can talk about backup to cloud as well, right?
Yeah, it also supports always encrypted, always on
yep.
capabilities. Which is fantastic.
Yep. So you want to take this, and then we've got a stretch.
Yeah, so I actually kind of touched on this before, but you know, the analysis services connector is now available for Power BI. I really recommend you have a go. We've got a lot of sessions on Power BI. We actually have brought out one of our finance directors. So it's the first time I brought a non-technical person to Ignite, and he's going to show you how he uses Power BI as a business user. Really, really good session to go to. He's got two sessions that he's using. And if you wanted to see how Power BI is being used to make decisions from a business perspective, absolutely worth going. Now, I'm just conscious of time. We've got about 2 minutes.
2 minutes. So what we're going to do is we're just going to jump out here and do a very simple StretchDB demo.
Okay, let me just get you on.
So, I think you'll be surprised how easy this is, right? So the first thing I need to do, just like we did with Polybase, I need to go and say, well, we want to enable StretchDB capability. So I'm just going to go on the database. So notice I'm in Contoso Expense. I'm going to stretch that and say, all right, I'm just going to enable it for Stretch, right? I then need to go into the database that I've enabled and say, let's right mouse click and say tasks. And what that does is it says, where did it go? Oh.
Yeah, stretch that.
Yep. Tasks. What's that?
You're on the Polybase one.
Oh, yep. Sorry, Contoso Expense. Sorry, you're right. Tasks, and it's enable. Yep, stretch. Yeah, sorry. Enable. You know what this changed between 2.2 and 2.3, right? That's why I was looking. In 2.2, yeah. It said tasks, and it basically in here it said enable for stretch, right? So that changed between 2.2 and 2.3. So I was looking for enable for stretch. So I'm going to basically say stretch, enable, right? And what it does is it simply walks through a simple wizard that says next. And what I'm going to do is to say, What tables do I want to stretch? And this is actually different between 2.2 and 2.3 as well, because in this one, it was a two-part. This actually does it all in one. So I'm going to say I want to enable expense report details. Okay, next. And then what I'm going to do is sign in. So I'm going to use my Azure account. Hopefully this works. All right. No. This is going to fail because I actually fat fingered the.
Here we go.
Oh yeah. Right. Sign in. And what this is awesome because I don't have to go and beforehand go create an Azure SQL Server or database. This will actually do it for me, right? So it says, okay, what subscription do you want to put this in? Right. So I'm gonna keep that one. Time's up. Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
All right. I'm gonna put this in West. Like I said, West US. I can say select an existing server. Some of this is new because in 2.2 you actually couldn't use an existing server, right? So I say I'm going to use that one, and then next, and keep going. And what it'll do at this point is say, all right, let's go back and just create a new server, just for fun. Create a new server. What's my login? All right, confirm password real quick. We won't take a lot of time. Right, and then if a firewall, right? So if I want to, anytime you're doing the Azure SQL database, you got to put a firewall from a security perspective. So I can management details. I don't want that, right? So I'll just go. So at that point, if I click next and finish, what it does is it basically enables and it stretches part of that data from on-premise to the cloud, right? And so what it'll do is it'll actually create a new server for me, create a new database for me in Azure SQL Database, and then stretch that data from, take part of that data and say, okay, move that to the cloud, right? Now, it doesn't keep it on premises, moves part of that data to the cloud, but again, transparent to the application, transparent to the user, same select star from, works, right? But as simple as this to enable stretch, yes? So it depends, again, anytime you talk about latency, there's several factors, right? How much data you're bringing down, what's your pipe to the internet, things like that.
So there's a lot of answers to that. I think probably one of the things that if you're serious about this technology, we've got a great way of doing direct connections into the Australian data centers with ExpressRoute, okay? So if you're wanting to get into that, yeah, there's another question down there. The boundary of what data goes up to Azure.
You know what? We'll take that offline. Everybody probably got that question, but we got to stop. So let's take that offline.
Yeah. Okay. We'll definitely be here after the break. Right, guys. We have got an action-packed week for you this week. No, we've done a high-level overview of SQL.